Hi, this is Vivek Kumar, BA Part 2, Faculty of Social Sciences. Friends, now I am going to record the BA Part 1 English optional, Far From the Madding Crowd by Thomas Hardy. First, we will record the summary of this novel. Chapter number 1. Gabriel Oak was a farmer of 28 years of age. He was a bachelor with good attractive features, but he was always dressed in outlandish and awkward dress. He had a watch with him, which was either fast or slow. One December morning, Gabriel saw a spring wagon on the road between Emminster and Chalk Newton. Laden with all sorts of domestic goods, a young pretty woman, the heroine of the novel Bathsheba, was sitting on the top of all the goods in the wagon. Gabriel saw this beautiful girl without being seen by the girl. He was attracted by her at first sight. As the wagon approached the turnpike gate, Oak followed it and reached the spot where an altercation had started between the gatekeeper and Bathsheba, for she was paying 2 pence less than was due. Gabriel took advantage of the situation and paid 2 pence on behalf of the maid. The girl did not express thanks for the generosity of the farmer, who was at that time ill-dressed. The wagon passed the gate. The gatekeeper observed that the passenger of the wagon was a beautiful girl, but Gabriel said in reply that she was vain. Now, come in the next chapter number 2. It was early midnight of St. Thomas Eve. It was a clear night. The stars were shining. Their twinkling seemed to be throbbing off the body. There was so much of calm that one could feel the movement of the earth. Just at this time, a man could hear the musical note of a flute. It was Oak playing on his flute. At dead of night, Oak saw a streak of light coming from the hut. He reached the hut and peeped through holes to see the woman, who was busy exchanging talks. The older woman expressed her intention to go home, while the younger complained of the hard life. She was dissatisfied with her lot, as she said that she had no servants and had to work with her own hands. During this conversation, the pretty young woman said that she had lost her hat. Oak, who had been overhearing all this talk, caught the hint of the lost hat. At the same time, he recognized the young woman as one whom he had seen the previous day and whom he had assisted by 2 pence. After some time, the two women went out of the cottage and Oak went to his hut. This is chapter number 3. The night mingled with the morrow. Oak had been brooding over his meeting with Bathsheba. Immediately, he heard the footsteps of some horse and saw the same women whom he had met the night before. He remembered that this woman had been complaining about the loss of her hat. He could very well understand that she had come out in search of her hat. Therefore, he himself tried to find out the hat and go it among the leaves. To this great surprise, he saw the young woman doing some manly exercise on the horseback. As the path was narrow and as the branches of the trees were hanging very low, the woman threw herself in full length on the horse back to the pass under the boughs, untouched by the twigs. Oak was pleasantly surprised to see the agility of the woman. She went into the shed to milk her cows and came out with a bucket full of milk in one hand and with the other extended in order to balance herself. Oak was attracted by the beautiful limbs, arms and shoulders of Bathsheba. Oak took the opportunity of returning the lost hat to her, but he committed a minor mistake of communicating to her that he had seen her on the horseback doing some fine exercise. This was a blunder on the part of Oak, as it created a sense of shame in Bathsheba, and she ran away into the cottage. After a few weeks, Oak was trying to burn some fuel inside the cottage in order to make the hut warm for himself and his limbs. But due to headache, he fell asleep with all of his heart closed. He would have died of suffocation, but his faithful dog continued to bark constantly and drew the attention of the same pretty woman who had come out to milk her cows. When Oak regained his consciousness, he found himself in the lap of the same woman. She was now a savior. He inquired about her name, but she did not tell him her name. Oak held her hand for some time. The young woman offered herself for a kiss, but Oak committed the second blunder of not kissing her, and then she withdrew herself. Now the next chapter, chapter number 4. Gabriel Oak had really fallen in love with the Bathsheba, although she did not know this fact. He had come to know the name of the woman, Bathsheba Everdeen. Every day he wanted to see her while she came to milk the cow. He came to know that the cow would go dry after a week. He was too much depressed at the idea of being unable to see her every day. He therefore resolved to meet the young woman at her aunt's house and put the proposal of marriage with her. He dressed himself in a very elegant suit and tried his utmost to look very charming. When he reached Bathsheba's house, he found that she had already gone. He candidly told Mrs. Hurst that he was willing to marry Bathsheba. Mrs. Gave and the idea that Bathsheba had many suitors while Oak was about to leave Mrs. Hurst's house. Bathsheba appeared on the scene and told Oak that she had no lovers. Then Oak proposed to marry her, but Bathsheba said, "No, no, I cannot. Do not press me anymore. I don't love you, and so it would be ridiculous." Oak took this refusal quite bravely and, departing, said, "Then I will ask you no more." Now, this is chapter number 5. Bathsheba left Norcombe for Weatherbury, which was at a distance of 20 miles from Norcombe. Oak continued to cherish the memory of sweet love, although she was out of sight. Oak had two dogs. Their elder dog was the father of younger dog. The older one was well trained, but the younger dog was inexperienced. He had eaten a dead lamb and was full of energy. In Norcombe Hill, there was a chalk pit. On the pit, there were two hedges which met at one point and formed the figure of V. There was a slight opening between the hedges near the brink of the hill. From this opening, things and animals could fall into the pit. One night, Oak arose suddenly from deep sleep and heard the fleeing sound of his sheep. He had forgotten to chain the younger dog who had chased the 200 sheep which were kept aloof from the 50 sheep which had already given birth to lambs. When Oak came out, he saw the dog standing the converging point of the hedges, just on the crag from where 200 sheep lay dead below in the pit. The dog came to Oak and began to lick his hand, as if he wanted appreciation for his heroic deed. Oak was totally ruined. He lost his temper and shot the dog dead. He began to review his position as a farmer. He was totally ruined. He thanked his stars that he had not married Bathsheba before. This tragedy occurred. He said to himself, "Thank God, I am not married. What would she have done in the poverty now coming upon me?" Oak made an estimate of his assets and liabilities. He could clear off the debt after selling all the stock, implements, and other materials. He did it, and he had only the clothes as his possession left with him. Now the next chapter, chapter number 6. After 2 months, Oak went to a neighboring fair at Casterbridge, where he wanted to take up the job of a bailiff or a shepherd. All types of people had gathered at Casterbridge Fair for securing jobs of carters, wagoners, and shepherds. Oak made frantic efforts to get the job of a shepherd, but he could not secure one. He had attired himself like a shepherd, and he had a crook in his hand. In spite of disguise, the farmers recognized him, and nobody employed him. When Oak was completely disappointed, he used his musical talents and earned some money by playing on the flute. But he thought that earning by flute playing could not be his permanent livelihood. Hence, he went to attend another fair of Scottsford, which was 6 or 7 miles away from Weatherbury. On this way to the fair, he had to pass through Weatherbury. Therefore, he decided to spend the night at the village. On the way, he came across a wagon at the roadside with little hay in it. Finding it lonely and comfortable, Oak lay in it and slept soundly. When he opened his eyes, he found himself in the running wagon with 2 more persons in it. They were Billy Smallsbury and Poor Grass. Both of them were talking. The conversation showed that they were workers of the farm of Bathsheba. Oak got down from the wagon. As he was stepping out, he saw luster of fire at a distant spot, which indicated that something was on fire. Impelled by his intuition to quench the fire, he ran towards it. On reaching the spot, he saw some hay stakes which had been mostly burnt. It was difficult to save them, but he saw that fire had almost spread to the wet bushels. He cried, "Stop the draft of the wind from wheat rack." Oak showed his spirit of adventure in putting out the fire. He took a ladder and went up the heap of wheat rack in order to save it from devouring fire. He looked like a shepherd in his dress. After the fire had been controlled, he went towards the woman who was on the back of a pony. He said, "Do you want a shepherd, madam?" But the woman did not reply. She was unwell. Hence, Oak could not recognize that she was Bathsheba. Oak could hardly be identified in that dress and appearance when everything had been discolored and blackened by the smokes of the fire. Now the next chapter, chapter number 7. Bathsheba and Gabriel Oak had met under strange circumstances. Bathsheba was very sorry to see that Oak had been reduced to a pitiable condition by fate. Invariably, she compared herself with the condition of Gabriel Oak and found herself satisfied at the idea that she was better than Gabriel Oak. Bathsheba required the services of a shepherd. He directed Gabriel to see the bailiff, who asked him to go to Malthus, where he could spend the night. As Oak was going to Malthus, he met a girl. He wanted to know from her the way to Malthus, and she wanted to know how long the book inn would remain open. Gabriel told the girl he knew nothing about the book inn, as he was an outsider and was not familiar with the timings and places. The girl said that Gabriel Oak looked more to be a farmer than a shepherd. Gabriel noticed a bundle of clothes lying at her feet. The girl requested Gabriel not to tell anybody about this reciting. Gabriel accepted her request, but he advised her to put on a cloak. As the girl was parting, Oak touched her hand and found that she was extremely miserable. He gave her all the money he had, and he wanted to know why she was in such a miserable plight. But she made no reply. The girl stood there motionless, and Gabriel Oak descended into the village of Weatherbury with deep sorrow in his heart. But wisdom lies in moderating mere impressions, and Gabriel endeavored to think little of this. Now this is chapter number 8. Warren's Malthus was surrounded by a wall which was covered with ivy. From the thatched roof of the house hung a wooden lantern. Oak heard voices inside. The atmosphere was full of the fragrance of malt. Inside the house, there were many persons who were talking with one another. Oak heard that their conversation related to the terrible fire that had broken out at Bathsheba's farm. On entering the room, Oak found many persons in the room who all welcomed him quite warmly. The owner of the house was Miles too. He said that he knew Oak's parents, and that Oak's father was a great friend of his son Jacob. Oak was shown all courtesy, he was offered a malt drink, and Oak felt quite happy in this company. The other two persons in the room were Jan Coggan and Henry Frey. Henry Frey was more or less a cynic who thought that the world was bad. Jan Coggan next offered a drink to Mark Clark. Joseph Poorgrass, another person in the room, did not get his share of drink as he was always shy. He admitted that he had been shy since his childhood and that shyness had been in the blood of his family. He described many events of his shyness. He had no courage to look at the face of Bathsheba. He was not only shy, but he was also timid. He described many experiences of his life to prove his timidity. One funny and foolish incident of his life was that once while he was in a forest, an owl was hooting. He thought that someone was asking the name. Under his misunderstanding, he said to the owl, "I am Joseph Poorgrass of Weatherbury, sir." These three rustics, when asked by Oak to say something about their mistress, could say nothing about Bathsheba. None of them, Poorgrass, John Coogan, Henry Frey, had gathered any information about Bathsheba. John Coogan was reminiscent of the hospitality of Bathsheba's uncle. He related the story of love between the uncle and diary maid Charlotte. Gabriel was inquisitive to know something about Bathsheba's parents. The maltster told him that Bathsheba's father was Levi Everdeen, who had married a woman of charms but who had become bankrupt twice or thrice in his life. Jan Coggan pointed out that Everdeen, Bathsheba's father, had weakness for other women. Therefore, he used to imagine that his wife was another man's wife. But in the old age, he led virtuous life. Gabriel wanted to digress from this conversation. He broached another topic of the family well-being of maltster. Maltster admitted that he was 117 years old. When others praised him for long age, he was really very happy. The malt mug was 3 years older than maltster. The rustics discovered that Gabriel had a flute with him and that he was the same person who had played on the flute at the Casterbury Fair. They all insisted on Gabriel to play on the flute. Gabriel gave a performance which was appreciated by them all. Mark Clark observed to the laughter of all present that Gabriel looked like an oak while he played on the flute. Poorgrass's opinion was different. He thought that Gabriel was a handsome figure. Oak thanked Poorgrass for this compliment. The maltster did not want to participate in the conversation. John Coggan promised to provide Oak with lodging. Henry Frey, who had gone out with others, returned into the room and broke the news that the bailiff Pennyways was caught red-handed while stealing barley from Bathsheba's barn, and that the maidservant of Bathsheba, Fanny Robin, had run away with a lover who lived at Casterbridge. These two events created much sensation in the audience. Gabriel spent the night with John Coggan. At night, he dreamt about her. Night had always been the time at which he saw Bathsheba most vividly, and through the slow hours of shadow, he tenderly regarded her image now. He decided to bring his utensils and books from Norcombe. His books consisted of the young man's best companion, the farmer's sure guide, the veterinary surgeon, Paradise Lost, The Pilgrim's Progress, Robinson Crusoe, and S. Dictionary. This was his library. From these books, he had gained more information than a man of opportunities from the laden shelves.
Ek bar click karenge.
Now, this is the next chapter, chapter number 9. Bathsheba's life had undergone a big change. She was leading the life of a farmer. She spent her time in talking to the maid servants and ordered them to do domestic duties. Lydie Smallbury was a personal attendant to Bathsheba. She was the great granddaughter of the maltster of the Malthouse. Bathsheba's maid servants came with the message to her that Boldwood had arrived and that he wanted to see her. But Lydie and Bathsheba were shabbily dressed. Hence, they were unable to come out to meet the visitor. Mrs. Coggan, on her own initiative, explained to Boldwood that inability of Bathsheba to see Boldwood as she was busy with many things. Boldwood stated that he had come to inquire about Fanny Robin. Mrs. Coggan replied that nothing had been known about Fanny. Bathsheba became a little interested in Boldwood and wanted to know about him. Lydie informed her that Boldwood was a rich farmer and handsome bachelor. Then Bathsheba felt apologetic that she did not meet Boldwood. She was told that Boldwood was quite correct towards women. Many women were willing to accept him as their husband, but he was not willing to marry. Bathsheba still more regretted that she did not meet Boldwood. Lydie then talked about the personal matters of Bathsheba. She wanted to know if she had been loved by any admirer. Bathsheba replied that she had been loved once by a suitor, but she rejected the offer because she could not love the man. Many servants of Bathsheba came to see her, but she asked them to wait in the hall where she liked them to see. Now the next chapter, chapter number 10. Bathsheba met her servants in the hall. She took her seat in a chair and talked with servants across a table. First of all, she declared that Bill Pennyways had been dismissed from service because he had stolen barley from the barn, and that she had determined to work as a bailiff herself. She was anxious to know about Fanny Robin. The servants told Bathsheba that she could not be trusted. Then Bathsheba called every servant one by one: Joseph Poorgrass, Matthew Moon, Andrew Randall, Temperance Miller, Henry Frey, and others. She asked Loban if he wanted to continue his services in the farm. Thereupon, Loban kept quiet, but his wife replied on his behalf, because he was his wife's slave. She gave always her age as 20, while she was 40. Henry Frey gave the suggestion to Bathsheba that an assistant farmer should be appointed under Oak. Bathsheba accepted the suggestion and appointed Con Ball as the helper to Gabriel Oak. Bathsheba inquired of Oak if he had any difficulty at the farm. Oak replied that he would consult Bathsheba if he would face any difficulty. Nobody could imagine that there had ever been any love between Bathsheba and Oak. William Smallsbury then appeared on the scene and informed Bathsheba that Fanny had run away with her lover to Custer Bridge. Her lover was a military man who had then been transferred to another place. Bathsheba then gave a warning to all her servants. She exhorted them to be honest and hard-working. She advised them all to be punctual and regular. She decided to supervise all the farm work herself. She then left the hall in the company of Lydie. Now the next chapter, chapter number 11. It was a chilly night. North of Weatherbury, there was a military station. The place looked quite gloomy and ghost-like due to dense darkness. Snow was falling. Even the warmest heart could not dare go out in such inclement weather. Alongside the left side of a river ran a thoroughfare. On this road opened the windows of barracks of the military man. A figure could be seen walking along the bank of the river. The woman was Fanny. She took up a handful of snow and threw it at the window. The snow missed the mark first. After several attempts, when the window was struck noisily, Sergeant Troy cried from inside, "Who is there?" The voice of the woman was not familiar to the soldier. In those days, marriage was not encouraged among soldiers. Hence, love communications could be made in the stealthy manner. The woman said, "It is Sergeant Troy." The soldier again cried, "What girl are you?" The woman replied somewhat sadly, "Oh, Frank, Do not you recognize? I am your wife, Fanny Robin. Fanny wanted to know if he could come out of the barracks. Sergeant Troy pleaded his inability. Fanny then asked him to marry her. Troy said that it was just impossible to marry her, and he further added that he would try to meet Fanny at the house of Mrs. Twills. Fanny then left the place. Now, next chapter, chapter number 12. The magnificent hall at Casterbridge was known as Corn Exchange. When Bathsheba used to attend the corn market, she dressed herself most gaudily. All farmers were attracted towards her. Some of the conservative farmers objected to Bathsheba's presence in the market because they felt that she could get these transactions done through her reliable agents. But the younger generation of farmers liked her presence very much because she was a most beautiful and attractive girl, and she would be an object of pleasure in their hours of dullness. Bathsheba, on her side, was very glad to find that many of the farmers were attracted towards her. But Bathsheba felt chagrined at the idea that there was one man in the whole crowd who did not feel at all attracted towards her. On way back to her farm, Bathsheba alluded to this careless and apathetic man, but her friend Liddy could not understand who that man was. Fortunately, that man was riding a carriage just close to that of Bathsheba. Now Liddy could clearly make out that he was Boldwood. The man seemed to have been deceived by some flit. That was the reason that he was so averse to Bathsheba. Now, the next chapter, chapter number 13 and 14. On a Sunday, on the 13th February, Bathsheba was chatting with Liddy. An old copy of the Bible was lying on the table. Liddy asked Bathsheba rather humorously if she knew the man she was going to marry. Liddy knew that Bathsheba had set her heart on Boldwood. She had purchased a card which she hesitated to send to Boldwood. But Liddy encouraged Bathsheba to send this card to Boldwood. Bathsheba agreed to the plan and sent the card to Boldwood, which bore the motto, "Marry Me." The valentine which Bathsheba sent to Boldwood completely upset him. Although Boldwood was a sober, calm, and self-controlled man, yet the love letter aroused his passion so much that he completely lost the balance of his mind. At every time in bed and out of bed, he thought of the women who sent this letter to him. When another letter was delivered to him, he opened it without reading the address. This letter was addressed to Gabriel Oak. Boldwood decided to beg pardon of Gabriel Oak and meet him personally. Now the next chapter, chapter number 15 and 16. Henry Frey, Matthew Moon, and Poor Grass meet Gabriel Oak at the maltster. They combined to speak ill of Bathsheba. Gabriel Oak condemned them because he did not like bad commentaries on character. Gabriel Oak protested strongly against bad remarks, yet they continued to speak jokingly about Bathsheba. Gabriel was enraged to hear indecent remarks about Bathsheba. Boldwood appeared on the scene and delivered a letter to Gabriel with the apology that he had opened the letter by mistake. Gabriel read the contents of the letter. It was from Fanny Robin for expressing her thankfulness for the financial help extended to her by Gabriel. When she was going to meet her lover, Sergeant Troy, Gabriel read out the letter to Boldwood. Fanny Robin said that she was going to marry Troy, and after marriage they would go to Weatherbury. Boldwood informed Gabriel that Troy could never keep his word. He was a clerk before he became a soldier, and that his parents were not chaste. He was deceiving Fanny Robin. Somehow, the marriage had been settled between Troy and Fanny Robin. The time and place and date had been fixed. Troy waited at All Saints in company of girls. The time passed out, Fanny did not turn up. The priest was also present at the occasion. Then impatiently, Troy walked out of the church and met Fanny outside in the street. Fanny explained to him that she had, by mistake, gone to the wrong church. She was very sorry for her deplorable mistake and assured Troy that they could be married the next day. Troy made no commitment and left the place. Now the next chapter, chapter number 17 and 18. One Saturday at the Casterbridge Market House, both Bathsheba and Boldwood were present. Boldwood starred at Bathsheba. He was filled with a strong passion for her. She seemed to be the embodiment of beauty. She appeared to be most beautiful in every respect. He remembered how he had received a card from Bathsheba with the motto, "Marry me." Bathsheba now seemed to have no fascination for Boldwood. She wanted to apologize to him about her mistake in sending Valentine. But on the second thought, she feared that her apology might be mistaken to be another expression of her inclination to marry. Boldwood was the owner of the Weatherbury farm. People looked on him as an aristocrat. He owned a large number of horses and animals. He lived all alone in the house because he was a confirmed bachelor. He was a quiet man, but behind the apparent calm was the volcanic nature of a passionate bachelor. Bathsheba could realize the risk in sending a Valentine letter to him. When Boldwood looked from his house in the distance, he could see three distinct figures there: Bathsheba, Gabriel, and Kenny. It was spring season, and the heart of Boldwood was swayed by the strong desire to go to Bathsheba and propose marriage with her. In no time, Bathsheba saw Boldwood at her gate. Gabriel saw blushes in the face of Bathsheba and was quite sure that she was flirting with Boldwood. Bathsheba could understand at once that Boldwood had come to her with the proposal of marriage and that this was the logical conclusion of the letter. The next chapter, chapter number 19, 20, and 21. Boldwood paid a visit to Bathsheba, but he could not find her at home. She had gone out on farm duties. Then he went to the farm of Bathsheba. She was at that time supervising the work of her laborers, Oak, Clogan, Poorgrass, and others. At that time, she was in her riding dress. Boldwood was full of passion for Bathsheba. Bathsheba could understand that Boldwood was pursuing her out of passion. She went to the stages where the workers could not see her. Finding her quite lonely, Boldwood said, "My life is not my own. Since I have beheld you clearly, I come to make you an offer of marriage." Bathsheba very courteously refused to marry him. Boldwood wooed and courted her. He pleaded that after marriage he will receive her of her farm duties. He further pleaded that she had encouraged him in the past for marriage by sending the Valentine. Boldwood made the last appeal to Bathsheba for marrying him. Bathsheba felt for Boldwood, particularly because he spoke so sincerely and earnestly, but she could not make any commitment. While parting from Bathsheba, Boldwood said, "I will wait." Bathsheba also left the place, but she observed that Boldwood stood fixedly looking at the ground and quite unconscious of his surroundings. Bathsheba was convinced that Boldwood's offer of love was quite sincere. His love for her was passionate and sincere. She wanted to marry him, but her heart could not accept him. She suffered from a mental conflict that she could not describe. Therefore, she went to her farm where her laborers, including Gabriel, were working. She wanted to talk to Gabriel, hence she asked other laborers to leave, and she alone was with Gabriel. She took him into confidence and invited his comments on her conduct. Gabriel spoke frankly and criticized her for making overtures of love to Gabriel, and that now she was persecuting Boldwood, who really loved him. Bathsheba felt the frank remarks of Gabriel so much that she lost her temper and asked Gabriel to leave her farm within a week, at which Gabriel said calmly that she would like to leave her service immediately, to which Bathsheba readily agreed, and so Gabriel walked away from her presence with the shears in his hands. Gabriel had stopped looking after Bathsheba's flock of sheep since the previous day when she had most offensively dismissed him from her service. The rustic laborers of Bathsheba reported that 70 of her sheep were going to die on account of having eaten clover, a poisonous weed, and that they could be only saved by operation of stomach, which Gabriel alone could perform. Bathsheba was in suspense. He ordered her servants to run to Boldwood and seek his help in the crisis. But the servants informed him that the only person who could save her sheep was Gabriel. He could alone perform the operation. After great reluctance, Bathsheba was ready to invite Gabriel for dealing with the emergency. When the workers of Bathsheba reached Gabriel with the request to save her sheep, he refused to come, but later on Bathsheba wrote a chit to him, "Please do not desert me." Gabriel was moved and he came with an instrument like a lance. He started operating his sheep and in no time all the sheep were saved. When the whole job was done, Bathsheba came near Gabriel and gave him a smile and said, "Gabriel, will you stay on with me?" Gabriel said in reply, "I will." She gave another style at him. Now this is the next chapter, chapter number 22, 23, and 24. Gabriel's heart was run down by his misfortunes. Especially he was disheartened by Bathsheba's desire to marry Boldwood. This sheep shearing season, Gabriel and other workers were very busy with shearing. In this work, Gabriel was the most skillful worker. Bathsheba was herself supervising the work. In the meantime, Boldwood appeared on the scene. Bathsheba began to chat with Boldwood. Gabriel felt chagrined, but he had some sense of self-respect and never interfered with the conversation between the two. Yet, his mind was greatly disturbed. Bathsheba went away to don herself in the riding suit. Boldwood and Bathsheba were going to enjoy horse ride together. This upset Gabriel very much. His mind having been divided, he injured a sheep while shearing. Bathsheba rebuked Gabriel for having wounded the sheep. Both Bathsheba and Boldwood went away riding their horses. The laborers began to condemn Bathsheba for her courting Boldwood. Gabriel also felt that Bathsheba was going to marry Boldwood. Yet he did not stop loving or worshipping Bathsheba in spite of all faults of Bathsheba. Just as at this moment, Kenny Ball appeared on the scene and reported that there would be a big feast of puddings and apple pies just after the sheep shearing was over. Other workers confirmed the report of Kenny Ball. A long table had been set for the sheep shearing dinner beside the house of Bathsheba. Bathsheba invited all her workers to the dinner. Bathsheba took her seat at the head and Oak sat at the bottom of it. There were songs and merry making. All the workers sang in their turn. Bathsheba herself sang an emotional song. Gabriel Oak played on the flute. Whenever Boldwood found chance, he whispered words of appreciation into the ears of Bathsheba. When the dinner was over, Boldwood and Bathsheba were left alone. In the touching scene, Boldwood knelt before Bathsheba and requested her to marry him. But Bathsheba replied that she would be able to tell him in a week or so whether she could marry him. Boldwood derived consolation even from this half promise. Every night, Bathsheba used to go round her cottage to see that there was nothing perilous about her home. One evening, while she was going on her usual round, she had to pass through plantation of firs. There was so much darkness that nothing was visible. As she was walking, she heard some footsteps which she mistook to be those of some villager returning home by the man who had come was Sergeant. Troy seated on his horse. By accident, the skirt of Bathsheba got stuck in the spur of the horse. The man wanted to disentangle the knot, but Bathsheba wanted to do it herself, but she found that it was difficult to unite the knot. The man appeared to be a smart, slim, and handsome military officer. The man said that he could easily disentangle the knot by cutting off a portion of her cuff. The man looked at the face of Bathsheba and found her very lovely. Bathsheba was very angry. Troy was very much fascinated by the beauty of Bathsheba. He said, I wish it had been the knot of knots of which there is no untying. And the rider went away. On coming back, Bathsheba asked Liddy if she knew any soldier camping at Weatherbury. On hearing about Troy from Liddy, Bathsheba regretted that she had been rude to the soldier. She liked the soldier more than Boldwood, who had never praised the beauty of Bathsheba as Troy had done. Now this is chapter 25, 26 and 27. Captain Troy was a strong character. He had faced many calamities, yet he had remained compulsive and bold. He never cared about the past or the future. He neither missed anything in life nor enjoyed anything. He was most untruthful to women. Troy was neither virtuous nor vicious. His vices were the result of his impulsive nature, but his virtues were the result of his thought and deliberation. But he was more impulsive than reasonable. Considering his middle-class position, he was fairly educated. He was a past master in flattering women. One or 2 weeks after Bathsheba came out to the farm for supervising hay-making. Among the workers was Troy, who was helping the laborers. Troy noticed Bathsheba coming. Bathsheba also looked at him blushingly. She fixed her eyes on the ground. Troy touched his cap and saluted Bathsheba in the military fashion. Bathsheba thanked him for his service, but she said that she did not want his services. According to his nature, Troy again began to praise Bathsheba, but she did not like the praise. Bathsheba felt very happy in her heart of hearts. Troy repeatedly said that Bathsheba was the prettiest woman he had ever seen. These remarks found welcome place in Bathsheba's heart. Troy knew well he had succeeded in capturing Bathsheba's heart. Troy inquired if Bathsheba knew French, and before she could reply, he quoted a French proverb which meant that he who loves well chastens well. Bathsheba was so much influenced by the words of Troy that she did not know what to say. Troy informed her that he was soon going out of Weatherbury. He also made an open confession that he had fallen in love with her. When Bathsheba wanted to know the time, Troy took the opportunity of presenting his watch to her. Bathsheba was surprised with this magnanimity of Troy, though she never wanted to accept this unexpected gift. So Troy, like a perfect actor, offered the watch and also took it back. Bathsheba was really on the verge of falling in love with him. The next day, Bathsheba saw a large swarm of bees settling on the branch of tree. She desired to help bees in settling in the right manner. She put on the bee-proof dress and gloves and climbed the tree for this purpose. Troy saw her from a distance climbing the tree. He at once ran towards her and cried, Miss Everdeen, let me assist you. You should not attempt such a thing yourself. Bathsheba at once got down the tree and threw away all the paraphernalia of beekeeping. Troy readily offered to hive the bees himself. Bathsheba agreed and Troy donned the gloves and the veil and climbed the tree. As he came down, he asked Bathsheba if she wanted to see exercise with the sword. He gave her time and place secretly, and Bathsheba agreed to the sword exercise at that time and place. Now, this is the last chapter. This is the last unit. Chapter 28 to 29 and 30. There was a hill behind the house of Bathsheba. It extended for a mile and it was quite uncultivable. At 8 o'clock in the evening, she went up the hill and after some waiting, she saw Troy standing in the pit, which was hidden from public view. There Bathsheba saw blandishment exercise performed by Troy. The last exercise was almost a feat, which meant attacking Bathsheba with the sword in such a skillful manner that it touched every part of her body, without injuring her in the least. He cut off one lock of hair with the greatest skill. At the end of these tricks, Troy kissed Bathsheba and then disappeared. All this marvelous skill in the sword play made Bathsheba wonder and brood even when Troy had disappeared from her view. Bathsheba was not foolish or impulsive by nature, but Troy injected folly into her mind and she lost all her power of reason and judgment. She was undoubtedly a woman of self-reliance. She lost all self-control and began to love Troy. She was a simple country girl and did not know the tricks of the city pupil. She easily fell victim to the wiles and tricks of Troy. As for Troy, his vices did not come to the view of man so easily as his virtues. Bathsheba had confessed to Liddy whatever passed between her and Boldwood, but she did not say anything about her developing affection for Troy. Gabriel knew that Bathsheba had started loving Troy and that she was not fair to Boldwood. Accordingly, one evening while Bathsheba was going through the neighboring fields, he followed her and told her that she should not go alone like that because the place was infested with scoundrels who could do anything with her. Gabriel also talked of Boldwood and said that he was most punctual visitor to her and that she must marry him. But Bathsheba replied that she had never committed herself to marry Boldwood. Gabriel was anxious to raise the affairs of Troy, but when he could not get suitable occasion, he abruptly said that she, Bathsheba, should not mix with Troy because Troy was a bad man. But Bathsheba said that Troy was a true and pious Christian. Gabriel again repeated she was being misguided by Troy. He left the place where Troy was to meet Bathsheba. He critically examined the assertion of Bathsheba that Troy was a regular visitor to the church and he found that it was a white lie. Bathsheba was moved by the remarks of Gabriel. She knew that Gabriel was quite sincere and honest. She did not like the idea that she was a flirt. Therefore, in excitement and impatience, she wrote a letter to Boldwood telling him that she had decided to marry Troy. She heard Liddy talking about her love affair with Troy. Bathsheba took Liddy into confidence and told her that she loved Troy. Bathsheba discussed with Liddy the merits of Troy and she made Liddy agree to the view that Troy was a very good man. Bathsheba got a promise from Liddy that she will not let the secret of her love with Troy be out. And this is chapter 31, 32, and 33. Bathsheba was certain that after receiving the letter, Boldwood will definitely come to explain his love to her. In order to avoid meeting Boldwood, she left her home to see a friend, but on the way she met Boldwood. She did not want to see Boldwood. He explained how deeply he loved her. Bathsheba requested him not to love her passionately because she could not reciprocate his love for herself. She told him that she was not going to marry him. As the discussion became hot, Boldwood became more jealous of Troy and he told quite audaciously that he will beat Troy mercilessly and that she had been fascinated by the glittering uniform of Troy. Bathsheba feared that Boldwood might behave violently with Troy. In order to keep Troy and Boldwood free from conflict, Bathsheba took her horse and gig and drove towards Bath. Gabriel and Cogan thought that some robber had stolen the horse of Bathsheba. They took the two horses of Boldwood and started on horseback to chase the robber. After a long journey, they came to a turnpike gate where, to their great surprise, they met Bathsheba. She told them that she was going to Bath for some days. She decided to send letters to Troy from Bath. After a week, Bathsheba sent a letter to Mariana that she would be detained for 1 week more at Bath. Cain Ball came from Bath and he reported to Gabriel that he had seen Troy and Bathsheba sitting lovingly together. Gabriel's face became pale to hear this. Cogan noticed the deep disappointment in Gabriel and he gave much consolation to him. Now come to the next chapters from 34, 35, and 36. After 2 weeks, Bathsheba returned from Bath. Boldwood came at once to meet her, but Bathsheba refused to see him. Boldwood began to curse his fate. Once he had so much liberty with Bathsheba, now he could not even meet her. Boldwood did not think Bathsheba loved Troy so passionately. One evening, when he met Troy at the house of Bathsheba, Troy showed him a paper. From the newspaper, Boldwood came to know that Bathsheba had been married to Troy at Bath. This completely upset Boldwood. He cursed Troy in the foulest language and threatened him with severest punishment. He then left the place and kept on wandering all the night like a ghost over hills and dales in Weatherbury. When the workers of Bathsheba saw Troy in the house of Bathsheba, they concluded that marriage had been celebrated between Troy and Bathsheba. Gabriel Oak had also been watching the love affairs of Bathsheba very closely. He continued to work most patiently and consistently for his mistress. It was he who kept Bathsheba informed about the meanness of Troy. Bathsheba came to know that Troy had previously love affair with Penny and that he had one daughter from Penny. Finally, Troy left Bathsheba and the farm. A report had been circulated that he had drowned. William Boldwood got the opportunity of coming once again into the emotional contact with Bathsheba. He again started wooing her. Bathsheba promised to marry him after 7 years when she would be legally entitled to do so. She then, according to law, would be free to marry Boldwood. At a Christmas Eve party, Troy appears dead drunk. Boldwood, in a fit of anger, shoots him. He is tried and sentenced to life imprisonment. Bathsheba is now perfectly disillusioned. She is prostrate with grief, and gradually she comes to realize that she has erred long before in not accepting the faithful Gabriel. When Gabriel decides to leave the farm, she comes to his cottage and offers herself to him in marriage. The proud, the beautiful Bathsheba at last finds contentment and peace with the man with whom she had love at first sight. It had been her folly to consider him commonplace and unattractive. Then, friends, that's the end of the summary of this novel.